The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
This week's Parsha is Parshas B'Shalach. I'd like to dwell on a few points in the Sedra. The Parsha begins by telling us by Hibishalach Paras on. It speaks of the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the going out of Egypt. The nation went out. This was on the 15th of Nisan. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu led the way for them. He told them which way to go. And then it was told to Paroi, where he realized what happened, that they went and they took the wealth of Egypt with them. So they decided, they had a turn of heart, and they decided to chase Klal Yisrael. He harnessed his chariot and he took his nation with him. He took his army, and Hashem hardened his heart and he pursued Yisrael. Now in Posuk Tes and Yud it states Vayirduchu Mitzrayim Achareihem, that Egypt pursued after them, Vayasigo Yisem Chonim Alayom, and they reached them when they were camping on the side of the sea. Kol Sus Rechav Parai Uporosho Vecheloi Al Pi Hachireis Lifnei Balzifon. And this was all of the horses and the chariots of Parai, and all of their riders, their captains, their soldiers. Uparai Hikriv, and Parai came close. By Yisu Bnei Yisrael Eseinehem, and the children of Israel lifted their eyes. Vihinei Mitzrayim Neseacharehem, and Egypt was coming after them. By Yiru Miod, and they had a great fear. By Yitzaku Bnei Yisrael El Hashem, and they cried out to Hashem. Now in this posuk, Ufare Hikriv, there are two questions that can be asked. First of all, what does it mean, Ufare Hikriv? And Pare came close. Then it should say, Ufare Korav. Not Hikriv. Hikriv means you make something else come close. Second question, why does it have to write Uvnei Yisrael Vayishu Vnei Yisrael Eseinehem, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes and behold Egypt was coming after them? What does it have to write they lifted up their eyes? Should have said that they saw Egypt come after them and they cried out to Hashem. The first question Rashi asks, and Rashi says, should have said Farai came close. What does it mean Hikriv? Which means Mahu Hikriv. It means he made something else come close. So Rashi says Hikriv Atzmai Menis Ameitz Lekadim Lifnehem Kimeshi Hisni Mohem. He forced himself to come close. He had to persuade his people and his army to pursue Israel. So he told them that, follow me to show you how right it is, I'll go first. So Hikri means that he forced himself to go first, to come close. This is the Pshutai. Rashi all the time says, Ein amikra yetzei midei Pshutai, that we always have the plain, simple meaning of the text. So therefore, this is what Rashi writes. However, the Medrash goes into this a little more. Medrash Rabbah in Parshas B'Shalach in Perekhof Aleph Oshei Mahu Farei Hikriv. What does it mean that Farei made something to come close? She Hikriv as Yisrael Litshuva, so also. He made Israel come close to Hashem. Omer Barachia, Yofe Haisa Hakrovas Farei Yisrael Mikup Tsumais, Tsemais, Utfilais. Farei did more for Israel than 100 fasts and prayers. Lama, why? Kivan Shirot V'achareihem, when he decided to run after them. V'rou Oison, Nisharu Mi'od, and they saw him coming, they became very much afraid. V'tolu Einehem Lemorum, so they looked upwards. Also tshuva, and they all did tshuva, bispalalu, and they cried out to Hashem, as it states, Vayitzaku v'nei Yisrael el Hashem. The Medrash continues. V'hoi ayam soger, v'aseinei reidef, v'achayas min amidbor. The yam was soger, the sea closed them in from the front. The desert closed them in from the sides. The enemy was coming from behind. Kivan shohoi Yisrael, kivan shorohi Yisrael shoyamukofim migimul ruchais. They saw that they were closed in from three sides, from four sides. Because they couldn't go forward because of the sea. So they could only look upwards. Tolu einehem la'avim shebashamayim. When there's an escape route to the right or to the left, or you can retreat to the back, or you can run forward, that's the way you look. But when every route is closed off, you can only look up. They looked up to Hashem. And they cried out to Hashem, as it states, Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael el Hashem. Now we can understand what the pasuk means. Ufarei hikriv. Farei made Yisrael come close to Hashem. Vayisu b'nei Yisrael eseinehem. And they lifted their eyes up towards the heavens. V'nei Mitzrayim nesei achareihem. And Mitzrayim was pursuing them, and they were locked in, surrounded, and they became very afraid. And they cried out to Hashem. This crying out to Hashem brought them closer to Hashem than 100 fast days or 100 tefillahs. This is what is meant. Uparei hikriv, Farei brought them close to Hashem. The Medrash continues. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do this? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to make a miracle for them. He wasn't going to let the sea stand in their way. So why didn't he immediately split the sea? And then they wouldn't have to come to this. Why did he have to make it that they're going to see Egypt coming down upon their backs, and they're going to be locked in from the sides from the desert and in the front from the sea? So the Medrash tells us a very great principle, a very great secret. The reason why Hashem did this is because he, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, waits for the prayers of Israel. And this was a way to force them into Tzaako, to cry out to him. Why should Hashem do that? Omar Bishu ben Levi, Lama Adovadayma. Bishu ben Levi says, I'll give you an example. Melech Shoya Bobaderech. There was a king who was traveling along the road one day. And there was a princess who also was traveling, and bandits attacked the princess's chariot. Tzaakas lei bevakosho mimeko atzilinim yaralistim. She cried out, please, someone save me from these bandits. Shoma melech, the king who was traveling in his chariot not too far away, he heard the cries. He came vehitzilo. So he chased away the bandits, killed them, whatever he did, and he saved her. Lacha yomim, after a few days, the king started to think about the episode, and he was thinking about the young princess, and he decided that this is a very, very fine young lady. He would like to marry her. Bikesh liso soli isha. He wanted to marry her. So he sent messages that she should come and speak with him, or he should come and speak with her. No, she refused. She didn't want anything to do with him. She refused. So this bothered him. He wanted somehow to engage her in a discussion. So what did the king do? The king waited one day until she was traveling in her chariot again, and he hired some bandits to go and hold up the chariot. Gira ba listim. When they did, she started to scream. The king heard. Kiven shebo aleha listim hiskilu tzaakos lamelech. The king, when he heard the screams, came running, and he said, lekacho yisi misave lishmaya kelech. This is what I was waiting for. I was waiting to hear you call me. Kach Yisrael. So is it with Yisrael. Kishoy b'mitzrayim v'hayam mishubodim b'hem. When Yisrael was in Egypt, and they were enslaved by all of the hard labor and the tzoras, ha'yishilu tzoakim. So they were crying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'toli neinehem la'HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they lifted their eyes upward. As it states, it cried out to Hashem. Immediately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu listened to their cries, and he took them out of slavery, he took them out of Egypt, and he gave them great wealth. Now HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to hear from them again. They had nothing, they didn't need Hashem anymore. What did they need Hashem for? Paro was finished. Egypt was finished. They weren't slaves anymore. They had no more tzoras. And they went out with so much wealth that it states that there wasn't a Jew that didn't have 10 donkeys laden with the wealth of Egypt. So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't hear from them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mevakesh lishmayas kolam pam acheres. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is misaveh. He wants to hear from them. He waits. What did he do? Therefore, he sent Pare after them. And instead of merely splitting the sea so there wouldn't be this whole episode, he let them be squeezed at the sea. Sent Pare after them and let them be locked in. And when they saw Pare is coming from behind and the deserts are on the sides and the sea in front, they looked upwards. Vayitzaku, and they cried to Hashem. At that time, Hashem said, I was waiting to hear your cries. Now that I've heard your cries, so now he told Mesha, why are you standing and being mispalel to me? Klal Yisrael already was mispalel to me. And go, carry on. I'll split the sea for you. And the Medrash brings a posuk on this in Shir Hashirim. Excuse me, Raymond, I think the first, Shlomo Melech wrote in Shir Hashirim Beis posuk Yudalid, Yonasi b'chagve hasela. My dove that is in the cracks of the rock. or Beseisra Hamadrego, or that is in the cracks, which is under the steps. Harini es mare arich. Please show me your beauty. Hashmini es kolech. Please let me hear your voice. Ki kolech orev umarech noveh. Because your voice is so pleasant and beautiful, and your appearance is so beautiful. What is this referring to? So Rashi says, Zenemar al esesho sherodav pare acherehim. Shlema Melech is referring to the time when Parai pursued Yisrael, and he caught them, and he had them closed in by the sea. Ve'ein mokum lonus lifneihem bipnei ayom, ve'leili fones bipnei chayes ros. They couldn't move. Lamaho yedemin beisishol liyena. So now they were like a dove that. The dove, when he sees the hawk coming, so the dove scrambles away, flies away. Now where should he fly? If the dove flies up, the hawk will get him. So he looks for a cleft in a rock and he hides there. As he started to fly into the cleft in the rock, all of a sudden a serpent stuck its head out of the rock. Or he tried to fly under one of the steps that go up the hill and a serpent came out. So he doesn't know what to do. To fly up, there's the hawk. To go into the rock, there's the serpent. Omale HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The same thing with Yisrael. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, show me your beauty and let me hear your voice. Sometimes you see a very beautiful bird and it disappears and you want to see more of it. So you try to think of how you can induce it to come around more. Or you hear it sing so beautiful and then it stops and you want to hear more. So this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. This is what it means in the posuk Uparei hikriv Vayisu aseinehem. Parei caused them to come close to Hashem because they lifted their eyes upward. Now in this medrash we have here the underlying principle of what a tzore is and what tefillah, tzaako, is. What does it mean, difficulties, and what does it mean, tzaako, to cry out to Hashem? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants misaveh letfilosin shel tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu enormously awaits for the prayers and the cries of his righteous. A similar case we have in another medrash, Rabbah, where the medrash asks, "Lomo ha'imos hoyu akoris?" Why were the matriarchs all barren? We see that Sarah was barren, and we see that Rivka was barren, and we see that Rachel was barren. Why? So the Midrash answers, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Kulam Noos, Kulam Ashires, they're all beautiful, they're all wealthy. If they have children, what will they need me for? Therefore, he made them barren, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Mis'avel et Filoshen Shal Tzadikim. He waits for their cries. What does he want? The cries and the tefillahs of the tzaddikim. Because the essence of tefillah is the closeness that it brings the one who is crying out to who he's crying to. This is the essence of tefillah. The tefillah comes from the korbonis. They come from the sacrifices. This is where we style all of our tefillahs after. And korban, the word korban means korav, like para hikriv. Because through the korbonis, the one who was bringing the sacrifice came close to the one that it was being offered to. And the whole purpose of the tefillah is to bring the person who has been mispalel close to the one that he's been mispalel to. When he's not being mispalel, then he doesn't think of the one he's been mispalel to, and he doesn't need him. It's an independence, and he's independent and he drifts away. But tefillah is the manifestation of dependence. Why do you cry out to Hashem? Because you need Hashem. You're dependent on Him. This creates a bond, a dveikus, a closeness that very few other things can create. So this is what is meant that Hashem is misavelet filosin shel tzaddikim. This is what He wants to cry. Just like the king. See, the king wanted some type of connection, some type of attachment. He was waiting for that opportunity with the princess. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. The king wanted that she should need him. If she'll need him, now there's a bond between them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that people should need him. If they need him, there's a bond. This is what parents also want, that their children should need them. Why? They don't want them to become totally independent where they don't need them anymore, because then there's no bond between them. What do they need the parents for? HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants that the creations need him, and they call out to him for all of their needs. Once they become independent and they drift away, like you see today in the atheistic world, you sever the bond. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's misave letfilosin shel tzaddikim. This is the essence, and this is the purpose of prayer. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to bring His righteous ones close to Him, if necessary, will do things which will force them to come close to Him. Therefore, He will bring a tzora on them in order that they should look upwards. Because too many times, it's human nature, when all is going well, then we don't have to look upwards. When there's harvocha, harvocha means breitkeit. Tzora means the narrow, the straits, and harvocha means when the relief from the narrows. When there's harvocha, so why do we have to look upwards? Why do we have to cry out to Hashem? Everything is wonderful. So at that time we no longer need Him and we're drifting away. The bond is being severed. So therefore He will bring a tzora in order that they should come and cry to Him. This is what Shlomo HaMelech said, that when it comes to the dove, so you say to the dove, what can I do to get the dove to cry out? I want to hear His beautiful voice. What can I do to get the dove to show me His beautiful colors? Kach osa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this tells us the sod, the inner secrets of what is the purpose of the tefillah and what is the purpose of the tzora. Now we can ask a question. It would seem, if that's the case, so then it seems that the tzaddikim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always be having tzoras. Heaven forbid. Because when there's a tzora, they'll cry to Hashem. This is what happens. We come and we say tilim and we cry to Hashem. We fast or whatever it might be. Once there's harvocha, so then we stop. If we stop with drifting away, so it'll be another tzorah. So it comes out, Tommy, the imdim b'tzoras, the tzaddikim will always be in tzoras. What kind of life is that? The answer to this is in the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Brachos. Hilchos Brachos at the end of Perek Yud. And at the end of Perek Yud Aleph, as follows. The end of Perek Yud, he writes, Klal Shel Dover. This is the general rule. Le'olam Yitzak Odom Ala Osid Lovay. A person should always cry out for the future. V'yivakesh Rachamim. And ask Hashem for Rachamim. For compassion and mercy. That's A. B, v'yitein hodoya al masha ovar. And he should always give praise on the past. V'yodeh v'yishabach kefi keche. And he should praise Hashem as much as he is capable of. V'chol amar b'lahedis es Hashem. And whoever praises Hashem more, all of the time, he is praiseworthy. So the Rambam is saying two things. When it comes to the future, a person must always cry to Hashem. Then a Kodesh Baruch Hu should give him what he needs, and he should have rachamim on him. When it comes to the past, there are Kodesh Baruch Hu shouldn't cry out to Hashem, but he should praise Hashem on everything that he did for him in the past. And call her marvelly. And whoever praises, the more one praises, the more praiseworthy is that person. The Rambam at the end of Perek Yud Aleph says as follows. In Perek Yud Aleph he's speaking about brochis. When you say a brocha with the Shemu Malchus, Baruch Ato Hashem, and the Kenu Melech Olam. Now these brochas we can only make where one is required to make them, because he's using Hashem's name. He's mentioning Shemu Malchus, Hashem's name and Hashem's kingdom. Therefore these brochas we can make only where one is required to make them. If you make a brocha where one is not required, that's called a brocha Sheina Tzricha. A brocha which was unnecessary. So the Rambam says, "Leilam yizora odem bebrocha sheinu tzricha." A person must always be careful not to make a brocha where it was unnecessary to make such a brocha. But yarbeh bebrochas atzrichas. But where it is allowed to make a brocha, where it is permitted to make a brocha, there he should take every opportunity to make those brochas. V'chein David Omar. And this is what David said, Bechol Yeim Avocheko. I will bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. So if it's where a brocha is not appropriate, then he must be very careful. But where it's appropriate, he should go out of his way to make these brochas. As David said, Bechol Yeim Avocheko. I will bless HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. Now what is the Rambam telling us? The Rambam is telling us some very great wisdom. He's saying, firstly, we're not to merely cry to Hashem when we have a problem. That's good. We're supposed to. When there's a problem, it states, then a person must go. He must cry out to Hashem. If it's a problem, it's brought in the Gemara, that if it's a problem to the Tzibor, to a whole community, then the community is supposed to come to the Botik and Nisiyos, to the shuls, and cry to Hashem. But the Rambam says, even when there's no problem, you must cry to Hashem. He says, Le'olam, always, Yitzak O'odam, a person must cry to Hashem. For what? Ala Osid, on the future. Because a person must always cry out to Hashem for his needs. Even if his needs are fulfilled, they are fulfilled now, but how do you know they will be fulfilled tomorrow? Right? Even if you have good health today, how do you know what tomorrow will bring? Even if you have a lot of wealth today, how do you know what tomorrow will bring? Even if you're having good mazel today, how do you know what will be tomorrow? How do you know what will be the next day? Right? Even if you're having great success with your children today, how do you know what will be next week? So, not only when a person has a problem today, but all of the time he has to cry out to Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should have rachamim on him for tomorrow and for the next day and for the next day. And this is what we do in the tefillahs, because in our tefillah, in our Shemini Esrei, so we don't only ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't only daven if we have a problem. If we don't have a problem, we do not daven. We daven every day. Because even if our needs are taken care of for today, we're going to have more needs being taken care of tomorrow. So firstly, a person always must cry out to Hashem. If not for now, then alo osid. That's one great principle that Rambam tells us. A second great principle he tells us, that when a person has a tzora, and he cries to Hashem, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him a solution, a wonderful solution, Arvoch. So what should he do? Can't cry to Hashem anymore on that. He has to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu and never stop praising him on that. Okay. If a person was in trouble and he got out of that trouble, he stopped saying till him. But now he must praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu and never stop praising Hashem on that. That's the second foundation that the Rambam says. He says, Klala shel dover le'elam yitzak odem ala osid lovei. A person must always cry out to Hashem for his future needs, v'yivakesh rachmi, and v'yitein haydo al mashu ovar, v'yedeh v'yishabak v'yikeche. And he must praise Hashem on his past victories, see, his past successes. And maybe a person would say, well, don't praise too much. No. He says, V'chol amar b'lahedis is Hashem. The more one praises, harei zeh meshubach, the greater that person is. And we see David HaMelech was always praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what he said in the next paragraph. Do not make brochas that are not appropriate. But where it's appropriate, look for the opportunities to make brochas and to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, if a person follows that, then it's not necessary to bring tzoras on him. Because if he's always crying out to Hashem, whether he has a tzora or not, for his future needs, and if he's always praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even after the tzora was solved, so why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to say that Hashmieni eskolech, let me hear your voice? I have to do something in order to engage you in conversation. He's hearing from him. The problem is when we stop crying out to Hashem. See? When there's a great tzora and we cry to Hashem, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings a hatzolah, he brings a success to it, and then we stop. And that, unfortunately, is human nature. We cry to Hashem when we need him. Once we don't need him anymore, then we forget about it. That's, unfortunately, human weaknesses. That is the keach hayetzer, where he'll bring darkness to the point where you'll forget. And then, unfortunately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to bring tzoras, heaven forbid, to wake us up again. These are everyday occurrences. I'll give you one example that's taking place here. We spoke about this a number of times. I don't know if I spoke on a Wednesday night about it. But a great miracle took place here in South Africa. Enormous miracle. And that is the rains we witnessed this season. It was only in early November. Later. It was in even late November. So we're talking just 6 weeks ago, that there was an enormous danger over the country because of severe drought conditions. And the Vaal Dam was 9% full. And they said that the consumption is 1% per month, which means 9 months of water left for this whole enormous area here that millions of people are using. And if there wouldn't be heavy, heavy rains over this summer, so then we'd get into the winter, and the winter is a no-rain period of time, and we could be looking forward to the Vaal Dam going dry. And many smaller dams did go dry. And at that time, the talk was, who knows what can be. And they were talking about the Farmer's Almanac and 7 year cycles of drought and so forth, and the whole business. And they, Kodesh Baruch Hu wasn't brought into the picture much. And then they were saying that to fill up the, they were hoping they'll let it go up to 20%, so at least they'll give us for this year and then over to the next summer, 20%. And I heard someone say that to fill up the Vaal Dam, they have to rain for 2 or 3 years nonstop, because it's so big, and the consumption is so much. In December, it was actually almost mid-December, it started to rain. Well, it started to rain and already end of October, November, but people were saying, look, it's a little help, but this and that. In December, the rains were setting in good, but still everybody was very, very pessimistic. And I went overseas. And when I came back, near the end of December, it was right at the end of December, beginning of January. So I see that they're making a ceremony, that they're opening the sluice gates of the Vaal Dam, because it has 102% water, and if any more water comes in, it'll be a danger for the dam. And all of the supportive dam systems in this whole network were also filled up. There was so much water that they couldn't store it away. There were stories of other dams that filled up overnight. Now this is literally, you're talking about millions and millions of gallons of water that fell in a matter of a month. And they can't remember when they opened the sluice gates of the dam again. Now, during the drought, so there was v'tzarkov. People were crying out to Hashem. Yeah. Now what happened after there's enough? Nobody talks about it. Papers don't write about it. Why should they write about it? They like to write about murders. People don't talk about it. Why should people talk about it? People like to talk how bad things are, not how good things are. So it's not in conversation. Now, if it would happen 50 years ago, that miracle, so it would be perhaps excusable why some people forgot about it. But we're talking about a miracle like that that happened 4 to 6 weeks ago. Yet it is totally past history. Totally past history. There should have been such celebrations and such haidor, shvach for haidor, gatherings to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a possibility the Afrikaner government was a very, very God-fearing government. And there could have been a strong possibility that if they were still in control, they would have made some type of public thanksgiving. The people go on as if nothing happened. Now we have another problem. This rain in many places of the country has turned from Gishmei Brocha into Gishmei Klola. Has turned to become where it's become devastating rains in some part of the country, where it's created havoc. Who knows if that's not why? This is what the Medrash says. If we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu for all of the harvocha, the wonders, so now he hears our voice, he's happy. But if we walk away and we forget about him, so now then he has to bring, heaven forbid, Tzoris, and we should come and talk to him again. Maybe that's why it's happening. So this is a very, very great principle that one always, that we always have to bear in mind. Another point in the Sedra is the Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, was of the greatest miracles, open miracles that ever took place in history. You have a great sea, and those of you who have traveled on the sea, or those of you who have swum in the sea or surfed in the sea, you know how strong the sea is. You have a great sea and it moves aside, splits, in order that 600,000 men altogether, there were many millions counting the women and the children and the old people, can walk through. And not only the Chazal tell us did the sea split, but it states Vayboku Amayim, Vayboku Hayam Leinemar. It doesn't say the sea split, it says the water split. Kol Mayim Shebaolam. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually split the whole creation of water, where all waters all over the world split at that time. And the sea is one of the major creations of the world, as it states, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Shesh Yomim Osa As Hashem Es HaShamayim Ves HaOretz Ves HaYom. Singles out the sea, the heavens, the earth, and the sea. So how did this come about? Because of that, the Chazal asked, "Be'ezes schus nifku ayom?" What was the schus of Israel? What was the enormous strength of Israel? The sea is far stronger than a person, that they could cause the sea to split. The Medrash and the Mechilta bring a number of reasons. The Maral goes through this at length in Gvuras Hashem and Perek Mem. I'd like to mention a few of these reasons and give an explanation into this as written in the Maral. Firstly, one reason the Medrash gives, Rabbani Ema Bishvil Abraham Ani Kareya Elohem Ayom. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that said it was in the schus of Abraham. Israel are the descendants of Abraham. And it was his strength that you inherited that caused the waters to split. Why do we say this? Because here it states Vayboku Hamayim. Word uses the word Boku. Boku means to split. The water split. And we find by Abraham also this word is used. Where? When Abraham was told to go and sacrifice Yitzchok, Isaac. So it states that Abraham, Vayashkim Abraham Baboker, Abraham got up in the morning, Vayavaker Atzei Ola, and he took wood and he split the wood for the Ola, because he would need wood to make a fire in order to sacrifice his son Yitzchok. So there also it uses the word Vayavaker Bikur. So we make what is known as a Zera Shoga. Since here it states that word, and that same word is written by Abraham, this gives us a clue, a guideline, that it was the strength of Abraham that caused the waters to split. That's one answer in the Medrash. Another answer in the Medrash is Shimon HaTeimoni Omer B'schus HaMilo Nifkayom. It was the schus of the Bris Milo that was by Israel. They all became circumcised. States. They all either were circumcised or they circumcised themselves, those that were not, in Egypt before the Korban Pesach, before they ate the Pesach that night. Incidentally, this, yeah, so in this, and then when they went to the sea, this was the schus, this was the strength that split the sea. Medrash says, where do we see some type of rem, some type of clue to this? Because it states, Oz Yoshia Mesha. The sea was split, it states, then sang Moshe, Hashir Azaz. Oz, Aleph Zayin, is the gematri numerical value of 8. Aleph and Zayin is 8. And Milo is Niton Bishmini. The mitzvah of Milo has to be performed on the 8th day. So from here, Shimon HaTeimoni learned it was through the schus of the Bris Milo. A third reason. Shimon Ish Kitrain says, B'schus Atzmeis Yesef Nikraya. It was through the strength and the merit of the Atzmos Yosef, of the bones of Yosef, that Klal Yisrael were carrying. In the beginning of the Parsha, where it says, Vayhi b'shalach es ha'om, Hashem sent out the nation, it states, Vayikach Meshe es Atzmos Yosef imay. Moshe took the bones of Yosef with him. And Moshe was at the head of the camp, and it says, imay with him. So therefore, the bones of Yosef also was being carried at the head of the camp. And that is what caused the sea to be split. The Medrash asks, how do you know? So it says, because in the Halal, in the Tehillim, that we say in the Halal, David HaMelech wrote, or some say Moshe Rabbeinu wrote that kapitel, Mitzeis Yisrael Mitzrayim. So it states, Vayar Hayom Vayonos. The sea looked, it gazed, Vayonos, and it ran back. The question is, what did the sea, when it gazed, what did it see? Looked, saw something and ran back, became afraid. What did it see that made it afraid? So, Shimon is Kitron, he darshaned. He said, we find the same expression by Yosef. When the wife of Potiphar tried to entice Yosef, so it says that she grabbed a hold of him, by Yonas Hachutzo, and Yosef ran back. He ran away. And it uses that term, I think, 4 times in that parsha. By Yonas Hachutzo, he ran back. So there it says Vayonos, and here it says the sea gazed and ran back. So from there we learn that what did he see that caused him to become so afraid? He saw Atzmos Yosef. He saw in the front of Israel the casket of Yosef, and that caused the sea to split. It was in the schus of Yosef. So we have here, amongst the various reasons, 3 were quoting. One was it was because of Avraham, and 2 it was because of the schus of the Milo, and 3 it was because of Yosef. Now, what is the Tzad HaShoveh Shebekulam? What is the common factor in all of these answers? So the Maral explains. What was taking place? Klal Yisrael were going out of Egypt. They were gaining their freedom. Where were they going? They were heading to Har Sinai. 49 days later, they were in Har Sinai to receive the Torah. What was standing in their way? The sea. And the sea not split, They would not have gained their freedom from Pare, because Pare was coming down upon them with their armies, and they would have never gotten to Har Sinai. So the sea was standing in the way of all of this. Now, in the world, you have what is known as the Chomer, the physical world, and this is what the sea represents. The sea is from the strongest physical powers in the world. All of that force, that weight, that energy. And then in the world also, you have the spiritual world. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, He did not create it merely a physical world, but He made it a spiritual world also. States He created this world with two letters of His name, with the He, which represents the physical world, and the Yud, which represents the spiritual world. The ultimate of the spiritual world was the Torah. That the Torah should come into the world. That Klal Yisrael should go to Har Sinai and say Nase v'nishma, accept the Torah. So what actually was happening here is the physical world was standing in the way of the spiritual perfection of the world. This is what was happening. Now, in every person, you also have that. Man was created with a physical chemer, gashmi. It states that man was created ofer min adama. He was created from the earth with all of the earthly qualities. Vayipak bapav nishmas chaim, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into him also a very, very strong spirit, which came from Hashem. And that spirit manifests itself in the brain and the soul of man. So both of these qualities you have in man himself. We all have it in us. We have this also in nations. Mitzrayim, Egypt, was known as the most physical of all of the nations. The Chazal tell us that there was no nation in the world that had greater abominations, greater animalistic abominations than Egypt, with one exception, it says. That was Canaan. The nations that lived in Canaan. But otherwise, this was Egypt. When many times the Torah tells us, when it comes to low abominations, the Torah says you should not do this because it's Maase Eretz Mitzrayim. This is what they did in Mitzrayim. Now, this was the nature of Egypt. And this means that their physical, earthly instincts ruled their spirit totally. When the prophet wanted to describe Egypt, he gave the following description: Zera kezera shushim, upsorim kipsar chamorim. Their seed is like the seed of horses, and their flesh is like the flesh of donkeys. And the donkeys in particular, because a donkey, in Hebrew, he's called the chamor. And chamor, in Hebrew, comes from the word chomer, which means something which is purely physical. If you want to take a something which is purely physical, that's called chemer. Because the donkey is more physical than all of the animals. He has a far greater physical element than spiritual element. That's why he's so stubborn, he's so slow, he's very strong, he can carry.
but he's difficult to move. And this was the Novi, the prophet's description of Mitzrayim. To the contrary, Israel is the spiritual, the most spiritual of all of the nations. Kodesh Baruch Hu said on Israel, Bonim atem l'Hashem l'kechem. You are my children. Noim, you're more beautiful. Kedoshim, Tahorim, sanctified, you're pure. You're elevated. This is why they could go and receive the Torah. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give the Torah to everyone, Torah was made for the whole world. But no nation could identify with it because the Torah is of an enormous spiritual level. When it came to Klal Yisrael, they had no problem. They said, whatever is written, we'll accept. So they are the most spiritual. So you have this amongst nations, you have this in the world in general, you have this in every individual. Now there's a constant struggle in man and in the world and amongst nations that who should rule? Who should rule? Mi Bereish. We have two kings, we have two sovereignties. Now the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world is that the spirit should rule. But this is contrary to Teva. This is contrary to nature. If a person follows his nature, he doesn't want to do mitzvahs. He doesn't want to learn Torah. He'd rather do exactly what his nature tells him to. He'll eat when he's whatever he wants to eat, whatever tastes good. He'll drink whatever tastes good. He'll sleep whenever he wants to sleep, and so forth. Klal Yisrael became free from Egypt when they reached the level that they could rule over Egypt. That means when they reached the level that their spirit could rule over physical nature. Egypt represented Teva, the physical nature of the world. Israel represented the spirit of the world. And when they could rule over Egypt, that's when they broke the bonds of Egypt. But that came only when they first could rule over themselves. A person can never be a king over others, a master over others, unless first he can be a master over himself. And a person who cannot be a master over himself, but is a slave to himself, he can end up being a slave to others. So throughout all of the years and generations in Egypt, they rose to high levels to the point where no longer were they slaves to themselves, they were masters over themselves. Even under the most difficult circumstances, they were masters over themselves. And from there they went and they became masters over Egypt. And they broke the bonds and they became free. This is what took place. Now, when they came to the sea, actually the sea was trying to do to them what Egypt was trying to do to them. Egypt was trying to enslave them. Egypt was the scenario of physical force enslaving the spirit. That's what the sea was trying to do. Because the sea represents from the greatest physical forces of the world. And it was going to stop the freedom, the chayrus of Israel from Egypt. If it wouldn't have moved, they would have ended up back as slaves of Egypt. And it was preventing the ultimate rule of the spirit in the world, the law of Torah. It was Klal Yisrael, and only Klal Yisrael that were capable of bringing the law of Torah into the world. Without Torah, the world becomes an animalistic society, becomes chaos, like we're witnessing today. Now, the sea was not capable of stopping such a thing, because Klal Yisrael was too strong, the spirit was too strong. And just like the spirit ruled the physical elements in themselves, and Yisrael ruled the physical powers of Egypt, they would rule over the sea also, and the sea would split. But where did they get such spiritual strength from? One place we see from Avraham. What did Avraham show when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, go and sacrifice your son Yitzchok? The human nature, the physical nature of man, there could be nothing more diametrically opposed to it. Go and take your son and sacrifice your son, the son that you love. Yet it states, Vayashkem Avraham Baboker. Avraham got up early. By Baker Atzia Ola. And he took the wood, which was the beginnings of the sacrificing of his son. And he broke it. And he broke physical elements with his spirit. Not with his physical strength, but with his spirit. That was the greatest display of spiritual strength ruling over the physical world. And that Israel inherited. And therefore, they also broke the sea, which represented the spiritual strength breaking the physical element of the world. Second answer, Bezchus Hamila. What was the Bezchus Hamila? Because the Bris Mila brings Kedusha, it brings sanctity to the person. Al Pi Tivoy, according to the nature that one is born with, the nature drives him in different directions, merely to fulfill his own desires, his own needs, and not to sanctify his powers, his instincts. And this is why, so the mitzvah of Milo is totally contrary to the nature of man. This is why it's brought that it was given on the eighth day, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world in 6 days, and then on the seventh day he added to the creation. It was Shabbos, but it was still part of this world. But the mitzvah of Milo comes in the eighth day. That's from a higher level, because the mitzvah of Milah is totally contrary to the nature of this world, and it's contrary to the nature of man. What does it show? It shows how the spirit of Yisrael prevails over their physical nature, and therefore the spirit prevailed over the sea. A third answer was Yosef. The sea gazed and it saw Yosef. What was Yosef special about? Yosef was the one who always prevailed over his physical nature. When he went to Egypt, and he was in a strange land, and he was a slave to Potiphar, and he was in the dungeon, and he was a king, and he became the wealthiest man in the world. No physical, human nature should have told us that Yosef should have forgotten all about the house of Yaakov and all about Torah and whatnot. Yet when Yaakov came down, he said, this is Yosef in Egypt, this is the Yosef who's a king, and this is my son Yosef, Omar Bitzitka. He has not changed at all. The same righteous Yosef. Kaim Uraisa Besisro, the Targum says. He fulfilled Torah in secrecy all of this time. He totally ruled his nature. And from the greatest illustrations was with the wife of Potiphar. Had he listened to her, she would have rewarded him greatly. Yet, Vayonos, he ran. When the sea saw Yosef coming, how could the sea rule over Yosef when the sea is merely physical? And Yosef shattered anything that was physical. So it was the schus of Yosef. That incidentally explains to us why Yosef is mentioned right in the beginning of the parsha, where it says that Hashem sent out the nation. And right there it says, Moshe took the remains of Yosef with him, because he was going to be one of those that would cause the splitting of the sea. So this is the interpretation of what took place at the Kriyas Yamsuf, why Klal Yisrael were capable of moving a sea. But now there's another interesting medrash. There's another interesting medrash. When we hear this, you know, we look at it with wonders. Who can move a sea? You get up and you look at that sea. Who can move it? We can move a few buckets of the sea. Yeah? But the billions of tons of water, who can move it? Yeah? The medrash tells us now, it's not such a great wonder. It's not such a pillar. Logically. Why? It's a very, very deep, very a medrash with great insight. The medrash says, Remeir says, what was so wondrous of moving the sea? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, when he created the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it states, V'amayim hoyu al pnei ha'aretz. When he created the world, and he created water, water spread over the entire earth. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded, Yikovu ha'mayim v'seiro er ha'yabosho. He shouted at the water, go and gather yourself up to specific places and don't spread over the whole world, in order that the earth shall be revealed. And at that time he gave gvulim, he gave boundaries to the sea. You can come up to here, but not more. Why did Hashem do that? He did that so the man that he was creating would have a place to live. Because without that, where is man going to live? Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Im le'odom yachidi, if for one individual man I did this, la'adas kedoshim al'achas kama v'kama. So for a whole nation of sanctified people, Israel, how much more so should I do it? What does this mean? The very essence that the waters cannot flood the earth is against their nature. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the sea. By nature they were capable of flooding the whole world, because it says al hoya panei ha'aretz, they covered everything. So the very essence that they have limitations, that goes against their nature. Why did Hashem do this? He did this for the sake of man. But why should he do it for the sake of man? The sea is stronger than man. The sea should have said, why should I move over for man? Let him move over for me. The answer is first of all, the sea is not stronger than man. Man is stronger than the sea. We said the sea is from the greatest creations which Hashem made. True. But the greatest is man. From everything that he made, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said that my greatest creation is man. And not only the greatest is man, but everything was created to serve him. So if the sea would say, why should I move over, let man move over, what do you mean? I didn't create you where man should serve you. I created you that you should serve man. Therefore move over and give him room to live. The whole purpose of the world was man. The whole purpose of man was to reach the spiritual heights of Torah. As it states, Hashem said, Yom HaShishi, on the sixth day, he said, the sixth day. If there'll be another sixth day, the sixth day of Sivan, and if my Torah will be brought down to this world, then good. If not, then I will reverse the whole creation into emptiness again. This was the purpose. So now Hashem said, what is so wondrous? If I created a whole world, and that's for the purpose of man, and I pushed all of the seas of the world into a corner for the purpose of one man. So now when there's an Eda Kadoshi, when there's a whole nation that are going out of Egypt and they're going to Har Sinai to receive the Torah, the sea should stand in their way. They were not created to serve the sea. The sea was created to serve man. And therefore, Avai Boku Hamayim, the sea split. From here we see how strong man can be and how much he can prevail over the physical world. And when man is at the level that he's supposed to be, if heaven forbid man is not at the level that he's supposed to be, then the elements prevail over man. But when man is at the level he's supposed to be, then heaven forbid nature should stand in his way. Because the whole universe was created for his sake. They were created to be his servant, not he their servant. So therefore, by Boku Hamayim, the waters were split.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.